from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, the cacophony of a modern American city, even a quiet residential part of a modern American city, is such that, at least in my ken, thank you, I don't notice the absence of birdsong. And I'm not talking about Cindy or Otis now for your old timers. I don't notice the absence of birdsong until I start hearing birds again. And it is January 13th, and there's birdsong in Santa Monica. So I guess the surge worked. Speaking of Santa Monica, this is a community. This is whence this broadcast originates today. This is such a wacky, counterintuitive kind of community in some ways. Which ways, Harry? Thank you for asking. This is a community that believes that if you can put all sorts of obstacles and impediments in a roadway, take a formerly four-lane roadway and re-stripe it so it's now got two lanes, put a lot of other impediments or planters in the road, put in little circular roundabouts to slow down drivers. Community believes you can do that and call it traffic calming. Like, that's what's going to happen. People are going to be calm when they have to drive slower because you put a planter in the way. You see, ladies and gentlemen, that's traffic calming for those of you keeping track on the increasingly paradoxical nature of the English language. And speaking of paradoxes, who knew the best political team on television isn't on television, and it's not a team. It's right here. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, the Transportation Safety or Security Administration, you know, they're looking out for us in so many ways. They're the people who are asking you to take all the liquids out and do all that other stuff. So certainly they would have, when they launched a website, they would have security as their prime objective, wouldn't they? Rather than just a no-bid contract to somebody with inside connections. Well, in October 2006, the TSA launched a website to help travelers whose names were erroneously listed on watch lists. Those are the people who get kicked off because their name is similar to the name of somebody that the FBI once thought was dangerous. The Redress website, as it's called, had, according to a House committee which issued a report on it this week, multiple security vulnerabilities. It was not hosted, for starters, on a government domain. Its homepage was not encrypted. One of its data submission pages was not encrypted. And its encrypted pages were not properly certified, exposing thousands of American travelers to potential identity theft. These security vulnerabilities only came to light after an internet blogger identified them almost a year ago. The committee says TSA awarded the website contract without competition, gave a small Virginia-based contractor called DSign Web Services a no-bid contract to design and operate the site. The statement of work for the contract, that is to say the bidding document, was written such that DSign Web was the only vendor that could meet program requirements. This is what TSA and FEMA, the Army Corps of Engineers, do all the time. Hey, it's open for bidding, but the bid paper is written so that only one company in the world can qualify. The TSA official in charge of the project was a former employee of the contractor. TSA didn't detect the website security weaknesses for months. TSA didn't provide sufficient oversight of the website and the contractor. And in the interest of accountability, ladies and gentlemen, neither the website design and builder nor the employee, formerly from the contractor, now TSA, has been sanctioned by the TSA for their roles in the deployment of an insecure website. TSA continues to pay DSign to host and maintain two other websites and TSA has taken no steps to discipline the employee who still holds a senior program management position at TSA. There's your 3 ounces of liquid at work. Hello, welcome to the show.
Let it rip, let it ride, let it roll. Ain't gonna tell what I did, ain't gonna do what I'm told. Got to try till I die to satisfy my soul. Let it rip, let it ride, let it roll. Get on up, go on out, come on in. I don't know where you're going, I don't care where you've been. If in decisions, your religion, I encourage you to sin. Get on up, go on out, come on in. Don't waste your money and your precious time trying to get ahead, always get left behind. Well, why you want to whisper when you need to scream and shout? Don't hold up, don't hold back, don't hold out. Let it rip, let it ride, let it roll. You might find peace of mind when you finally lose control. That person you've been messing with is bound to take its toll. Let it rip, let it ride, let it roll.
The edge of America, from the home of the homeless, from the traffic calming capital of North America, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. I know the national news media spent a lot of time this week on whether Hillary's tears were genuine. Maybe not enough time on that incident in the Straits of Hormuz. Oh, I know there was initially, a lot of interest in it. Here's Katie Couric from the CBS Evening News the very next night.
Do you want to say, meanwhile, the Pentagon put out tapes?
1 minute.
What do you want to say?
I don't know. I just feel like we're kind of, like, not making it kind of dramatic enough, you know? The Pentagon also released dramatic tapes.
45.
Do you want to say? The Pentagon released dramatic tape. You know what I mean, Chair? It's kind of... Here. Thanks.
Yeah, Chair, you know what I mean. Well, by the end of the week, the Washington Post was almost alone in reporting the small box-like objects dropped in the water by those Iranian boats, which outnumbered the large American ships, 5-3, imagine, as they approached the U.S. warships in the Persian Gulf last week, posed no threat to the American vessels. That's according to American officials. After passing the white objects, commanders on the USS Port Royal and its accompanying destroyer and frigate, that's what I say, decided there was so little danger from the objects they did not bother to radio other ships to warn them, the officials said. The ship saw that the objects were floating and light, and they were not heavy or something that would have caused damage such as a mine, said Commander Lydia Robertson, a spokeswoman for the Navy's Fifth Fleet. Even so, the high levels of the Bush administration continue to describe the incident as a provocative one. And Katie Couric wanted to describe it as dramatic. Well, wanted to describe the tapes released by the Pentagon as dramatic, even though now it's clear that that first videotape had audio dubbed on, not in the... was dubbed on from another time, either in that incident or... And according to the Washington Post, the Iranian video that was released later in the week wasn't dramatic enough to get mentioned by Katie, I don't think, was from an earlier incident that same day, which was not at all out of the ordinary. So the Iranians trying to make it seem as though the incident in question was just routine, when apparently, whatever it was, it wasn't. But to find out what may really have happened, ladies and gentlemen, I have to read the trades for you. This is from the Navy Times. Filipino monkey may be behind radio threats, ship drivers say. I'll read it for you. The threatening radio transmission heard at the end of a video showing harassing maneuvers by Iranian patrol boats in the Straits of Hormuz may have come from a locally famous heckler known among ship drivers as the Filipino monkey. Since the incident was announced to the public the day after it occurred, the U.S. Navy has said it's unclear where the voice came from. In the videotape released by the Pentagon, that dramatic video, the screen goes black at the very end and the voice can be heard, distancing it from the scenes on the water. We don't know sure where they came from, says Commander Lydia Robertson. It could have been a shore station. While the threat, "I am coming to you, you will explode in a few minutes," was picked up during the incident, further jacking up the tension, there's no proof yet of its origin. And several Navy officials have said it's difficult to figure out who's talking. Look who doesn't know who's talking. Based on my experience operating in that part of the world where there's a lot of maritime activity, trying to discern who's speaking on the radio channel is very hard to do. Chief of Naval Operations Admiral Gary Roughhead, Admiral Gary Roughhead told Navy Times during a brief telephone interview. Indeed, the voice in the audio sounds different from the one belonging to an Iranian officer shown speaking to the cruiser Port Royal over a radio from a small open boat in the video. He's shown in a radio exchange at one point asking the U.S. warship to change from the common bridge-to-bridge channel 16 to another channel, perhaps to speak to the Navy without being interrupted. Further, there's none of the background noise in the audio released by the U.S. that would have been picked up by a radio handset in an open boat. So, whose voice was it? In recent years, American ships operating in the Middle East have had to contend with a mysterious but profane voice known by the ethnically insulting handle of Filipino monkey. Likely more than one person who listens in on ship-to-ship radio traffic and then jumps on the net, shouting insults and jabbering vile epithets. Navy women who are overheard on the radio are said to suffer particularly degrading treatment. Several Navy ship drivers interviewed by Navy Times are raising the possibility that the monkey, or an imitator, an imitation prankster, was indeed featured in that video. Rick Hoffman, a retired captain who commanded the cruiser Huey City and spent many of his 17 years at sea in the Gulf, was subject to the renegade radio talker repeatedly, often without pause, during the tanker wars of the late 1980s. quote. For 25 years, there's been this mythical guy out there who, hour after hour, shouts obscenities and threats. He could be tied up pierside somewhere, or he could be on the bridge of a merchant ship. He used to go all night long. The guy is crazy. But who knows how many Filipino monkeys there are? Could it have been a spurious transmission? Absolutely. Unquote. Furthermore, Hoffman said radio signals have a way of traveling long distances in that area. Could have been KFI. No. Under certain weather conditions, I could hear Bahrain from the Strait of Hormuz, said Commander Jeff Davis. No, sorry, that's the guy we quoted earlier. Not Roughhead. Wouldn't quote him again. No, it's quoting Rick Hoffman, former commander. But a Navy spokesman said he could not say if the voice belonged to the heckler. When asked if U.S. officials considered whether the threats came from someone beside the Iranians when releasing the video and audio, Roughhead, the chief of naval operations, said, quote, "The reason there is audio superimposed over the video is it gives you a better idea of what is happening," unquote. Not that different from Katie. And a Navy spokesman said the audio was part of the, quote, totality, unquote, of the situation and helped to show the, quote, aggressive behavior, unquote. Another former cruiser skipper said he thought the monkey might be behind the audio threats when he first heard them earlier this week. "It wouldn't have surprised me at all," he said. "There's all kinds of chatter on Channel 16. Anybody with a receiver and transmitter can hear something's going on. It was entirely plausible and consistent with the radio environment to interject themselves and make a threatening comment and think they're being funny." This former skipper also noted how quiet and clean the radio threat was, especially when radio calls from small boats and the chop are noisy and cluttered. "That sounded," he says, "like somebody on the beach or a large ship going by." He and others believe the Filipino monkey is comprised of several people, and whoever gets on Channel 16 to heckle instantly gets the moniker. A civilian mariner with experience in that region said the Filipino monkey phenomenon is worldwide and has been going on for years. While it happens all over the world, it's more likely to occur around the Strait of Hormuz because there's so much shipping traffic, he says. Can we say dramatic, Jerry? You know what I mean, Jerry? Can we say dramatic? Can we still say it? After I've read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature. Now, news of the digital wonderland, ladies and gentlemen. Best Buy's chief executive says he's very nervous about being able to supply customers with the millions of digital TV converter boxes needed ahead of the shutdown of analog TV in 13 months. Yes, I said 13. "I think it's one of the biggest risks our industry has," says Vice Chairman and CEO Brad Anderson of Best Buy. Okay, then. We won't get nervous about that. We'll get nervous about this, maybe. From the first place in England where analog TV was shut off and replaced by digital, the resulting crisp picture quality, 40 digital channels replacing 4 analog ones, has been well received. But the pristine pictures may be short-lived. This according to New Scientist magazine. Governments in Europe and the United States are planning to auction off the sections of the UHF spectrum left vacant because the new TV digital channels take up less of a frequency swath, thanks to digital compression. Hey, that must make them look better, too. Companies will bid to acquire the open frequency band so they can provide always on internet services for cell phones and other wireless devices. That prospect has engineers in both Europe and the U.S. worried. They warn the high power signals from wireless devices could, say it with me now, interfere with digital television. So we've done all this to get to that. Interference from mobile devices could cause sudden and complete loss of pictures, says Walid Sami, a spectrum engineering specialist at the European Broadcasting Union in Geneva. For as long as someone using a cell phone remains near the TV receiver, well, that won't be happening much because nobody uses... Oh. In the U.S., the National Association of Broadcasters has accused Microsoft and Google of playing Russian roulette with digital television quality because they're bidding for some of the new frequencies. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's a digital wonderland, won't you? The mainstream media are passing on the word from the administration that the surge is working. But, you know, one hand wins, the other hand loses. The three quarter of a billion dollar United States embassy under construction in Baghdad. We've talked about it before. The news now, according to the Washington Post, is that the firefighting system in the complex has potential safety problems that top U.S. officials dismissed in their rush to complete or to declare construction complete. This according to internal State Department documents and emails. Some officials say potentially life-threatening problems have been left untouched. This is serious enough to get someone killed, says a State Department official who wants to keep his knees, so he keeps his name secret. The fire systems are the tip of the iceberg. That is the most visible, he says, but no one has ever inspected the electrical system, the power plant, and other parts of the embassy complex, which will house more than 1,000 people and is vulnerable, says the Post, to mortar attacks. One thing is clear. It's bigger than the Pentagon. How about that for an embassy? Bigger than the Pentagon. Other sources say the disputes basically are about paperwork, largely because the contractor had never built an embassy. Didn't realize it needed State Department approval for substituting a metal pipe for plastic pipe. Oh, it's the acreage is four times the size of the Pentagon. I'm sure the building itself isn't that big. The Justice Department, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, is conducting a criminal investigation of the contract and subcontracts at the Baghdad embassy. But don't worry, because the Kuwaiti firm that was the prime contractor, plagued by allegations of shoddy construction and safety flaws, is still getting lucrative new contracts to build U.S. diplomatic installations overseas. That's accountability, the way we like it. First Kuwaiti General Trading and Contracting won a contract to build a U.S. consulate in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, one of at least three State Department jobs that First Kuwaiti has recently won, this according to McClatchy newspapers. And, lest you think that we're just being nice to the Kuwaitis, the project manager, the State Department guy managing the building of the Baghdad embassy, continues to oversee the construction from Kuwait, because the ambassador, our ambassador to Iraq, banished him from Baghdad. So he's supervising the Baghdad construction from Kuwait. One State Department official with detailed knowledge of the unopened embassy expressed outrage to McClatchy newspapers that his superiors haven't replaced James Golden, the project manager. I find it absolutely amazing that management doesn't seem to think a trifle odd that two people under investigation are still making all the management decisions under this same contract, the official who requested anonymity said. Accountability, ladies and gentlemen. Ain't it beautiful?
Haley's waitress never comes around. around. I just want some coffee. Is that too much to ask? Haley's waitress is not up to the task. And when she finally appears, it's like she's
This is Le Show. From CPR, Continental Public Radio, your daily update on the sidelights and down low on the headlines. Up to here.
Up to here, CPR's once daily, once over, not so lately, on the trends behind tomorrow's former trends. I'm Michelle Nabel.
And I'm Milton Getzler.
The political primary season has moved on to South Carolina, Nevada, and Michigan. But in the wake of the New Hampshire primaries, there's something of a wake-up call for punditry and pollistry.
The disparity between the pre-election polls, the exit polls, and the final results in the Democratic primary was startling, if not stunning, or vice versa. And in the aftermath of the stun or startle, one question stands out. Why? Followed closely by how? Today, we're up to here with the answers.
Dr. Kenneth Krell is polling director for the CPR poll. Dr. Krell, I guess you've been crunching and recrunching the numbers these last few days.
Mm-hmm.
What do they tell you?
Michelle, there are certain known variables that can affect the accuracy of a poll, the size of the sample, the randomness of the sample, and the response rate. Beyond that, of course, the crucial factor is the construction of the questions. A poorly constructed question can lead to results that, while accurate, may be of limited usefulness.
Mm-hmm. For example?
For example what?
For example, anything. Just exemplify, if you will.
Well, as a matter of fact, on our last poll before the New Hampshire voting, we had a misprint in question 14. Now, our employees are trained to ask the questions as printed for the sake of both consistency and reliability. So that misprint was repeated to each respondent.
Mm. So the question was?
Well, as printed it was, are you planning to vote in the primary tomorrow? And the responses were, frankly, predictably, and overwhelmingly, no, I'll probably be staying in town. Now, that may well have been an accurate picture of the travel plans of our sample, but let's just say it didn't make the 5 p.m. newscast.
But misprints weren't a significant factor in the disconnect, if you will, between the poll results and the vote counts, were they?
So far as we've been able to determine, no. But they said I was on for 3 minutes, so I...
Well, Dr. Krell, was there something systematically wrong with the pre-election polls and the exit polls?
It depends what you mean by systematically.
It would also depend what I mean by wrong, I suppose.
That's pretty good bad. So far, we're pretty satisfied with the methodology we used. We're looking right now at the deeper layer, the actual methodography. And by the end of next week, we'll have completed an unprecedented methodostomy. Mm. Then I think we'll have a much better idea of what we're looking at or for.
Dr. Krell, thanks so much for getting us up to here.
No pleasure.
What the pollsters think went wrong is one thing, but what do people in New Hampshire think happened last Tuesday? CPR's Ira Zipkin has been looking into it. Now he's looking up and talking to us. On Bedford, New Hampshire's main shopping street, Vermont Street, the coffee spot is like a Starbucks and a Red Lobster rolled into one. That's where we assembled a representative sampling of whoever was walking by yesterday morning to share a cup of coffee, or a beverage of their choice, not to exceed $1.50, to talk about the election and the polls.
You see, you have to start with the basics. Queen Elizabeth of England is the greatest dealer of illegal drugs the world has ever seen. Everything else just flows from that.
Well, it just seems obvious. We still don't know why Building 7 at the World Trade Center came down. So how are we supposed to know how these polls went so wrong?
I don't talk to pollsters, you know, nobody I know does either. I mean, I'm talking to you, but, you know, this isn't really a poll. I mean, like, you know, we're just sitting here, but, you know, you're not writing anything down except for the price of my espresso grande.
In the towns where the votes were hand-counted, Obama won, where they were machine-counted, Hillary won. So the first question you have to ask is, how did they count the poll results?
I don't really have an opinion on the polling. You know, I was just hoping somebody in here could tell me, you know, how to get back on the interstate.
Well, I'm kind of ashamed to admit it, but I lied to the person who called me up. You know, so maybe like I helped screw up the polling or something. I mean, she said, you know, would you like Verizon DSL for $21 a month? And I told her, you know, I'm sorry, I already had it. You know, like I didn't.
People in the coffee spot may not know what went wrong with the polls, but they're not letting that stop them from having an opinion about it. I'm Ira Zipkin at the coffee spot. No, he's paying for his own grande. Thanks.
While our interview with Dr. Krell and Ira's piece were being aired, we had a focus group of scientifically selected people listening to them in Studio 3C. And CPB Opinionomics consultant Ed Spinkle is here in Studio 3B now to analyze the results.
Very, very volatile experience for these people, Michelle. The timeline graph is all over the place. Great instantaneous reactions to so much of what they heard.
Well, for example?
Well, most of our group really liked the young man who doesn't talk to pollsters. There was a strong negative reaction to the man who was lost. A couple of the focus group members said that he should have gone to a gas station.
Any overall impressions of the polls and or the pollsters?
We try not to ask any and or questions, Michelle. Mm-hmm. But this group's strongest reaction to Dr. Krell was about two-thirds of the way through his interview. Several group members said they wanted to know more about methodostomy and specifically whether it's painful.
Ed, your overall take on the focus group's reaction to what they heard about the polling problems in New Hampshire?
On the whole, Michelle, they feel like there's more to this story than we know right now. Mm-hmm. They're taking most of them a wait-and-see attitude, except for a couple of our folks who don't watch the news, and I guess the best way to describe their attitude is wait and don't see.
Ed Spinkle, thanks.
My problem.
And from us, for now, you're up to here. Support comes from the American Corn Refiners Council, reminding you that corn is the fast lane to the future.
Tomorrow, more of the ebb and flow of the day's events, reaching from the far corners of the world to up to here. I'm Michelle Nabel.
And I'm Milton Getzler from Up to Here. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
I took a trip on a train and I thought about you. I passed a shadowy lane and I thought about you. Two or three cars parked under the stars, a winding stream, moon shining down on some little town. With each beam, the same old dream. And every stop that we made, oh, I thought about you. And when I pulled down the shade, then I really felt blue. I peeked through the crack and looked at the track, the one going back to you. And what did I do? I thought about you. There were two or three cars parked under the stars, winding stream, moon shining down on some little town. And with each beam, the same old dream. And then I peeked through the crack and I looked at that track, one going back to you. And what did I do? I thought about you.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. This may put the incident in the Strait of Hormuz and some other kind of context for your listening pleasure. Dateline Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia needs to gradually change, this from Arab News, gradually change the rial currency's peg to the U.S. dollar to protect the value of Saudi Arabian reserves. That's according to the state-owned National Commercial Bank of Saudi Arabia. Central bank's net foreign assets are about $285 billion. Quote, the time has come to reconsider the continued pegging of the Saudi rial to the U.S. dollar, provided this is done gradually, said Al-Sheikh, Saeed Al-Sheikh, chief economist at the kingdom's largest bank, said. The continuing weakness of the dollar and declining interest rates would shrink returns achieved by our investments, he said. Real returns may become less and even risk dwindling. The dollar peg forces the Saudi Central Bank to track U.S. monetary policy at the time when the Federal Reserve is cutting interest rates. But wait, there's more. From the Telegraph, U.S. President George Bush is to promise $20 billion in advanced weaponry to Saudi Arabia. How's that? Want to stick with the dollar now? Will that be enough to convince moderate Arab states to shun Iran? The Telegraph doubts it. The weapons deal will include precision-guided missiles. It was postponed over opposition last fall from the Congress. Now, Bush administration will notify Congress of its intent to conclude the deal as the president lands in Riyadh. Arab diplomats warn that even the most loyal U.S. allies, such as Saudi Arabia, face rising Islamist sympathies in their own countries and a concerted effort by Tehran to boost diplomatic and trade links with its near neighbors. The Gulf states are reluctant to risk infuriating the Iranian regime or be seen siding with Israel in a dispute over Tehran's nuclear program. We know Iran is a threat, said one Arab diplomat, speaking on condition of anonymity. But President Bush has to give us something to be in this camp of so-called moderation. So-called moderation, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Bush, says Riyad Khawaji of the Dubai-based Institute for Near East and Gulf Military Analysis, says Bush will have to sell himself as the real superpower with a real vision, unquote. Nobody in the region here is happy about what Iran is doing, he says, but at the same time, nobody is willing to put his neck out for the Americans. That's nice. It's a nice feeling. Also, from outside the bubble, from McClatchy newspapers, what was with the whole Benazir Bhutto assassination thing? Two new reports suggest that the killing may have been an ambitious plot, and the government of President Musharraf knows far more than it's admitted about the murder. You got to be kidding me now. You got to be kidding me. Perv in the know? A police officer who witnessed the assassination said that a mysterious crowd stopped Bhutto's car that day, moving her to emerge through the sunroof. She thought she was greeting her supporters to wave to them. And a document has surfaced in the Pakistani news media that contradicts the government's version of her death, containing details on the pistol and the suicide bomb used in the murder. And more outside the bubble? Just a little bit more. Pakistan angrily rejected statements by the International Atomic Energy Agency head Mohammed Al-Baradei expressing concerns for the safety of its nuclear weapons, calling them, quote, irresponsible and unwarranted. Yeah, Al-Baradei, he keeps getting it wrong, doesn't he? The Pakistanis aren't that friendly to foreign media, any friendlier than to their own media. An American freelance journalist and scholar based in Pakistan was ordered to leave the country this week after writing an article that might have been deemed unflattering to the government. That, according to friends, colleagues, and a U.S.-based media rights group. But journalism isn't covering itself with laurels at the moment. Katie wants to apply the adjective dramatic, but some media observers are in a tizzy over a recent Maureen Dowd column in the New York Times. It was published with a dateline, Derry, New Hampshire, even though when she wrote it, she was in Jerusalem. Some of the quotes used in the column were collected by her assistant without a reporting credit. But editorial page editor Andy Rosenthal says the inside the profession controversy over the matter is, quote, driving me out of my effing mind. He used the entire word. Datelines, he says, this is Andy Rosenthal of the New York Times, datelines are kind of an anachronism. It's a little bit of an affectation, unquote. Yeah, telling people where you actually are. I've mentioned before, drives me crazy on both the commercial networks and on NPR, you'll notice sometimes somebody will end a story and just say, I'm Shimmy Schneeman, and they won't tell you where they are. That means they sat in Washington or New York and narrated a story that happened thousands of miles away is what that means. Yeah, deadlines are an anachronism because they tell you the reporter actually might have seen what he or she is talking about. But the press office of the White House ain't golden either. At a recent White House press briefing, a reporter asked spokesperson Dana Perino about Vladimir Putin's suggestion that a U.S. plan to base parts of our missile defense shield in Europe was similar to the events that led to the Cuban Missile Crisis. Perino's response, quote, well, I think that the historical comparison does not exactly work. When a second reporter asked whether his comparison to the Cuban Missile Crisis had been helpful, Perino said, I think that, look, the president has said we have a good but complicated and complex relationship with Russia. She then admitted on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me that she panicked when she got the Cuban Missile Crisis question because the White House spokesperson wasn't exactly sure what the Cuban Missile Crisis was. Quote, I really know nothing about the Cuban Missile Crisis. It had to do with Cuba and missiles, I'm pretty sure. Unquote. She went home late that night and asked her husband, quote, wasn't that like the Bay of Pigs thing? And he said, quote, oh, Dana. I join in that sentiment, ladies and gentlemen. And now, no direct connection, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Some of the people who tuned into one of our affiliated stations, KCPW in Salt Lake City, recently weren't laughing at a satire poking fun at a Mike Huckabee family recipe. More than a few of them, in fact, were outraged by the Huck and the Eucharist sketch, which aired January 7th on a show called Fair Game with Faith Sally. Mm-hmm. The transcript in part said, quote, try this Huckabee family favorite, deep-fried body of Christ. Oh. Boring holy wafers no more. Take one Eucharist, preferably post-transubstantiation. Deep-fry in fat, not vegetable oil, ladies, until crispy. Serve piping hot. Unquote the sketch on somebody else's show. Just in case you're just tuning in. Many sent emails to Bill Donahue, president of the Catholic League. At that point, we decided to issue a press release, says Donahue. He knows what to do. He said the Catholic League was lodging a formal complaint with the general manager of KCPW, who was also the recipient of more than 500 angry emails. Public Radio International produces the show, pulled the content, and Faith herself issued an apology on her program on Thursday. Donahue said he was satisfied with the apology. The family of an 8-month-old Sacramento, California girl followed the instructions on the label of their prescription antibiotic, and the result was nearly fatal. Christina Norris was sick the week before Christmas, so her grandmother took the baby to the family's pediatrician. She had an ear infection, and she got a prescription for the antibiotic Augmentin. The Walgreens pharmacy filled the prescription with the generic amoxicillin and provided instructions on the label to give the baby a half teaspoonful twice daily. The baby started throwing up almost immediately, vomiting and foaming at the mouth, said her grandmother, and then all of a sudden she got real limp. The family rushed her to Kaiser Permanente Medical Center, where a medical team began an intravenous drip to rehydrate the baby. A doctor told the mother Christina was close to death when she arrived. The Walgreens pharmacy was supposed to dilute the antibiotic with water to make 30 doses. They had given a baby a half teaspoon of concentrated powder. Walgreens, quote, we're sorry this child received her medicine in powder form rather than mixed with water at the pharmacy as intended. We apologize to the family and we want them to know we're investigating what happened and we'll take any appropriate action. The breakdown might have been prevented if not for an oversimplified label which simply describes the medication as white, which it is in both powdered and liquid form. Sanyo Electric Company says it will pay an $8.3 million fine for issuing false financial statements over several years. The consumer electronics maker apologized to its shareholders and others for causing trouble and vowed to strive hard to prevent a recurrence. Dateline Frankfurt, Germany, a T-shirt using a yellow Star of David to liken the treatment of smokers in Germany to that of Jews during Nazi rule has angered, yep, German Jews. Earlier this week, after several German states introduced sweeping bans on smoking, in restaurants and bars. An events planner started offering the T-shirt for sale on its website. Jewish groups responded with outrage. The operator of the website said Friday he had not sold any of the shirts and it was a publicity stunt gone awry. The shirt features a yellow Star of David, similar to the one the Jews were forced to wear under the Nazis. The word smoker is written across the star instead of Jews. The person who was listed as the owner of the site told the Associated Press he'd not actually sold any shirts, nor had any even been made, despite a declaration on the site that 1,000 had been sold since December. That 1,000 T-shirts were sold was a lie for promotional purposes, he said. He apologized and said, I have to agree, this was tasteless. Well, if you're lying for promotional reasons, I think that's supposed to be okay. Dateline Trenton, New Jersey. New Jersey became the first northern state in the U.S. to apologize for slavery this week. Why should the South have all the fun? The state legislature approved a resolution expressing profound regret for New Jersey's role in slavery. This resolution does nothing more than say New Jersey is sorry about its shameful past, said Assemblyman William Payne, who sponsored the measure. The resolution offers an apology for the wrongs inflicted by slavery and its after effects in the United States of America. And finally, Tiger Woods saw no insult or ill will in a television commentator's comment that any golfer trying to test him might have to, quote, lynch him in a back alley, Woods' agent said. The Golf Channel's Kelly Tilghman made the comment during coverage of the PGA Tour event in Hawaii while joking with analyst Nick Faldo about Woods. This story is a non-issue, says his agent. Tiger and Kelly are friends. Tiger has a great deal of respect for Kelly. Regardless of the choice of words used, we know that there was no ill intent in her comments. Tilghman said Tuesday in a statement she meant no insult to Woods. I've known Tiger for 12 years, she said, and I've apologized directly to him. I also apologize to our viewers who may have been offended by my comments. The apologies... Oh, I'm over here. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And finally... No. News of the Warm is what's next. Won't you? I guess you will.
Soft, listen to the warmth. We can listen to the warmth.
Salmon survived massive dams and fishing fleets, but now they're feeling the heat of global warming, and it's likely to hammer them as hard as anything they've faced. Biologists who've spent their careers watching over the fish said temperatures expected to rise an average of up to 1 degree per decade in the next century will probably wipe out some fragile runs of salmon. Climate is expected to push river temperatures about 2 degrees higher on average by 2040. Already, some steelhead going home to the Snake River divert into a cooler river, the Deschutes, to escape the warm Columbia. Days of unusually scorching heat and meager river flows killed more than 100 salmon last July already. Global warming is taking its toll on the existence of fauna, particularly microbes in the icy continent of Antarctica. According to scientists, increased ultraviolet radiation on the icy continent over the last 4 to 5 years has affected the fauna. Its effect on marine life was not alarming. Last year was the second warmest year on record, according to data collected from around the globe. That's a new analysis from NASA climatologists. Last year was the fifth warmest on record, says NOAA. The groups reached the same conclusion on where Earth's climate has been headed for the past quarter century. 7 of the 8 warmest years on record have occurred since 2001. Australians living in the outback may catch more viruses because global warming is aiding the spread of mosquitoes that carry the diseases. Malaria has long been endemic to Kenya's humid coast and swampy lowlands. But in recent decades, scientists now note an increase in epidemics in the upland regions. Many medical and environmental experts attribute the spike in malaria to climate change. And the Citing a warming climate and sprawling development, officials with the Iditarod sled dog race in Alaska said they were implementing permanent logistical changes to cope with climate change. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted... Well, let's see. Oh, no, there's one more I'll share with you because we have a moment. New research challenges the generally accepted belief that substantial ice sheets could not have existed on Earth during past super warm climate events. The study by ocean researchers at Scripps, UC San Diego, provides strong evidence that a glacial ice cap, about half the size of the modern day ice sheet, existed 91 million years ago during a period of intense global warming. So, we could have warming and still have ice. We got it all. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I got to go out and calm some traffic. So that's going to be it for this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ The Planet, around the world via the internet, on your computer at two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. On XM and Sirius Satellite Radio, on the Mighty 104 in Berlin. Available as a free download from audible.com/LeShow and available as a free podcast from kcrw.com. No slashes required. And it'll be just like Katie calling everything more dramatic. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you really? All righty, thank you very much. For more Katie Couric on election night in New Hampshire, check with the Harry Shearer channel at mydamnchannel.com starting this Tuesday. It's cute. HarryShearer.com is the place to go if you want an email address for the proprietor of this broadcast or if you want to see the playlist of the music featured here on HarryShearer.com. Get your factor wear somewhere else. HarryShearer.com, home of the best political team on television. And they're not on television. And they're not a team. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of traffic calming and the homeless. It's a twofer.